A young woman called Ellen was found dead in the home she shared with her fiancé Sam in Philadelphia. Sam found her body inside their locked apartment when he returned from the gym. The case was considered to be a suicide by the police. However, a series of circumstances led the victim's family and several experts to believe that she was actually murdered. Today's case will talk about the invisible killer, or not, of Ellen Greenberg. Ellen Ray Greenberg was born on June 23, 1983, in New York City. She was the only daughter of Joshua and Sandra Greenberg. Ellen was described by everyone as a happy person, full of energy and possessing a striking and contagious smile. Everyone who knew her had nothing bad to say about her. She had a beautiful relationship with her parents and was very close to them. The family lived in Harrisburg, but Ellen moved to Philadelphia to attend college. She earned a master's degree specializing in reading and interpretation and began teaching at a school in Philadelphia, a job she loved. In 2007, at the age of 24, Ellen met Samuel Goldberg, also 24 years old. He was better known as Sam and worked as a producer at NBC Sports. The young woman's family recalled that she was completely in love with him and that they had a very happy relationship. After a few years of dating, they both moved to an apartment in the Manyunk neighborhood of Philadelphia, in the Venice Lofts complex. In June 2010, Ellen and Sam, aged 27, got engaged, with their wedding scheduled for the following year, in August 2011. Ellen never hid her joy and happiness looking forward to that day. It would be so special, and she was over the moon with excitement, getting involved in all the stages of preparation for the event. On January 22, 2011, the invitations were sent out. 4 days later, January 26th, it was snowing heavily. Her school closed early as the weather forecast was for worsening conditions, and transport in the city would be compromised. Ellen, along with a few other teachers, contacted all the students' parents so they could pick them up ahead of time. Students and staff all returned to their homes at around noon. Sam was also released from work, so they both spent the afternoon together in the apartment. At 4:45 p.m., Sam left to go exercise at the condominium's own gym, and at around 5:30 p.m., he returned, but noticed that the door was locked from the inside. His key opened the lock, but the internal latch prevented entry. Ellen didn't respond. Sam then began sending multiple text messages to his fiancée. These messages were not one after the other. They were not simultaneous. They had a space of time between each one. They were like, "Hi, open the door. What are you doing? I'm getting irritated. You better have an excuse for that. What the hell is that?" After waiting several minutes, Sam went to the lobby and spoke to Phil Hanton, the 67-year-old security guard at the complex, and asked him to unlock their apartment. Hanton assumed that the door was locked because the couple had fought. Ellen was inside, and that's why she didn't open the door. He advised the young man to resolve their disagreement and find a peaceful way to open the door. So, almost an hour after the first time he called for his fiancée, at around 6:15 p.m., Sam managed to break down the door on his own. Upon entering the apartment, he saw his bride sitting on the kitchen floor right at the entrance, leaning against the foot of the counter, with blood on her face, body, the counter, and on the floor. Sam immediately called 911. The call lasted about 5 minutes, and I'm going to present it to you here in a summarized version. But this was a somewhat strange call, especially during the resuscitation procedure.
Oh, I need a murder. Yeah, I just walked to my apartment. My fiance's on the floor with blood everywhere.
What is the address?
4601 Flat Rock Road. Please come. Help. 4601 Flat Rock Road.
Is this a house or apartment?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Apartment.
It's an apartment.
What apartment number?
Please hurry, please.
Where is she bleeding from?
See, I don't know. I can't tell. She's...
No. So you have to calm yourself down in order to get you some help.
I'm sorry. She, okay. I don't know. I'm looking at her right now. I can't see anything. She didn't, there's nothing broken. She's bleeding. Ellie!
You don't know where she's bleeding from? Can't
Ellie!
See where the blood's coming from?
I think she hit her head. But it's
up
everywhere.
Okay,
it's everywhere.
She might have fallen. Do you know what happened?
She may have slipped. There's blood on the table. Her face is a little purple.
Okay, hold on for rescue for her. Stay on the phone.
Philadelphia Fire Department 842, what's the address? No,
4601 Flat Rock Road, please hurry.
4601 Flat Rock?
Yes.
What's wrong?
I went downstairs to go work out. I came back up, the door was latched. My fiance's inside, she wasn't answering, so after about a half hour, I decided to break it down. I see her now just on the floor with blood. She's not responding.
Okay, is she breathing? Look at her chest. I need you to calm down, and I need you to look at her chest. It's really...
I really don't think she is.
Listen to me. Someone's on the way. Look at her chest. Is she flat on her back?
She's on her back. Do I bring her...
Look at her chest and tell me if it's going up and down, up and down.
I don't see her moving.
Okay, do you know how to do CPR?
I don't.
Okay, I can tell you what to do, okay, until they get there. I want you to keep her...
Oh, God.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, okay.
Are you willing to do CPR with me over the phone until they get there?
I have to, right?
Okay, so get her flat on her back, bare her chest, okay? You want to rip her shirt off. Okay, she needs to kneel down by her side.
Oh, my God. Ellie, please.
Listen, you can't freak out, sir, because you...
Okay, I'm trying not. Her shirt won't come off. It's a zipper.
Rip
oh, my
off.
God. She stabbed herself.
Where?
She fell with a knife. Oh, no. Her knife's sticking out.
Her what?
There's a knife sticking out of her heart.
Oh, she stabbed herself?
I guess so. I don't know where she fell on it. I don't know.
Okay, well, don't touch it.
Okay, so I just let her down here now? I mean, what do I do?
No, I mean, you can't... If the knife is in her chest, it's going to be kind of hard for you to do CPR at this time.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Police, which operator?
277.
Is someone coming here?
Yes, they are. You said 4601 Flat Rock, right?
Yes.
Okay, someone's on the way. And the knife is still inside?
Wait, so what?
The knife is still inside of her?
Yes, I didn't take it out.
Was it her chest or what area did it?
It's in her chest. It looks like it's right in her heart.
The police arrived, and Ellen Greenberg was pronounced dead at 6:40 p.m. Initial investigations found several observations. It appeared that she had been about to eat because there was a colander with blueberries and some orange slices on the kitchen table. There were two clean knives in the sink. The apartment had two access points, the main door and a small balcony with a fire escape. The door was locked, so Sam had to break it down. There were no wet marks on the stairwell or inside the apartment. There were no footprints in the snow on the fire escape. The door to the fire escape was also locked, not to mention the difficulty one would have had accessing it due to the blizzard that was happening at that time. There were no blood marks outside the kitchen area. Nothing was out of place, and there was nothing of value missing from the property. Ellen's head, neck, and shoulders were resting on the bottom of the kitchen counter. The rest of her body was on the floor, and she was holding a clean white towel in her left hand. When questioned, the neighbours said they had not heard any suspicious noise from the apartment that afternoon. They were first alerted to the situation when Sam started knocking on the door calling for his fiancée, and then they heard the door being kicked down. Based on the available evidence, Ellen's death was ruled as a suicide. The first strange fact of this whole situation was, Joshua and Sandra only found out about their daughter's death when Ellen's friends called them to pay their condolences. They told Joshua and Sandra that the news of their daughter's death was on TV. Sam had not contacted his future in-laws with news of the terrible tragedy. The following day, the 27th, an autopsy was performed. The information revealed in the autopsy report makes the case quite confusing. So, I will explain it in technical terms so that you can understand how the suicide ruling was refuted by the coroner's report. Coroner Marlon Osborne was responsible for conducting the procedure. He detected around 10 stab wounds on the chest that ranged from 2 to 10 centimetres. There were 2 knife wounds in the belly area, 5 centimetres deep. A 6 centimetres cut was identified on the scalp. And on the back of the head, there were exactly 10 cuts, also made with a knife. On the abdomen, right arm and right leg, there were several bruises with different stages of recovery. Some had been there for a few days, others for a few weeks. The marks resembled bruises that might occur in yoga or Pilates classes, but she did not engage in these types of activities. At the end of the examination, the doctor concluded that, even without any signs of defence against an attack, Ellen had been murdered. From that point on, the death was treated as a homicide. This presented a problem for the police, as they had already cleared the crime scene. Sam's own family had also gone into the apartment to collect some items for him while he was gone. The only clue that was left, so to speak, was the knife that was delivered as evidence to the coroner and the victim's body. She had been sent for forensic examination, and after DNA tests, only Ellen's DNA was identified. In the toxicological tests carried out, no illegal drugs were identified, much less alcohol. Only substances from 2 medications were found in her system, clonazepam and zolpidem, and I'll return to talk about these medications later. The investigative team went to check the images captured by the complex's security cameras to see if Sam's description of what had happened that night was true. The police reported that the images confirmed everything that he said. Also, no unauthorized person was seen passing through any area around the complex. It is worth mentioning that there was no security camera in the apartment hallway. When Joshua and Sandra were questioned about their daughter's relationship with Sam, they both stated that there appeared to be nothing wrong between the couple. Ellen was very much in love with Sam, and the two seemed happy together. But the police discovered through them that although Ellen was a cheerful, happy person, her behaviour had changed several months before her death. She was more closed off, nervous, anxious, insecure, and when they asked what was happening, she just said it was because of work. They said that Ellen had expressed a desire to quit her job and that she wanted to return to live in Harrisburg with her parents. But at the same time, when her parents asked about the wedding, she told them everything was fine and that she did not intend to postpone or cancel the event. It is not clear whether she wanted to relocate with her fiancé or if it would just be for the period before the wedding, and I even need to make an addendum now about something important that I realised while researching this case. Practically nothing about Sam's statements was made public. He could have given his version of this, say if he knew about this idea of the bride wanting to move, with him or not. Maybe he even talked about it, but as I said, it's not public. The advice her parents gave her in this conversation was that she should seek professional help before making any decision. Following her parents' advice, Ellen started seeing psychiatrist Ellen Berman. Note that they both have the same name, so I will identify the doctor by her last name, just Berman. When questioned by police, Berman reported that her patient had felt overwhelmed at work and that she had not reported any suicidal thoughts. Investigators then asked if there had been any reports of abuse from Sam, but Berman said no. Ellen never reported any abuse from her fiancé and only spoke positively about him. The psychiatrist even recalled that Ellen had a smile on her face when she talked about Sam. Berman diagnosed Ellen with severe anxiety and prescribed clonazepam and zolpidem, antidepressant medications that would help her sleep. These were the substances found in the toxicological examination. Ellen's last appointment with Berman was on January 19, 2011. At school, the police spoke to the other teachers and coordinators, and they all said that they did not see anything different from the ordinary, normal stress that everyone has. But nothing that could be compared to the change in behaviour described by her parents: nervous, anxious, insecure. In other words, Ellen may have been lying to her parents and her psychiatrist about the real reason. As a guarantee, case detective John McNamee suggested hiring a neuropathologist to review the perforations in the victim's spinal cord. This was of fundamental importance because if it were identified that any of the perforations had damaged the spinal cord, she would not have the strength enough to make the last blow to the chest. It was identified that the spinal cord was hit, but the spine was not, which concluded that she may have become dizzy, let's say. In other words, as she would not have lost all movement or completely blacked out, the possibility of suicide was valid, and on account of that, the investigators ended up changing the cause of death once more to suicide. But how did she manage to give herself more than 8 blows to the chest, 2 to the stomach, and another 10 to her back? And normally when someone wants to take their own life, they usually do it quickly. They do not torture themselves. To the police, it seemed that if the possibility of suicide existed, then that was the finding, and they closed the case at the end of 2011.
Hey, você se interessa por crimes reais, serial killers, coisas macabras e tem um senso de humor um tanto quanto sórdido? Se sim, você não está sozinho.
Se você precisa de um lugar recheado de pessoas como você, venha conhecer o podcast Pátria Amada Criminal.
Todas as semanas tentamos entender o pior da humanidade.
Nesse processo a gente ri, chora, fica brava, fofoca, porque afinal de contas é assim que a gente fala quando está entre amigos.
Suas novas melhores amigas trevosas estão aqui no Pátria Amada Criminal.
Ellen's parents, who once again found out through the media about the new suicide ruling, did not agree with this hypothesis. They decided to start their own investigation. Joshua and Sandra gathered the coroner's reports and photos of the body and took them to a pathology specialist named Cyril Wecht, a forensic pathologist famous for challenging the theory of the single bullet that killed John F. Kennedy. In his analysis, Cyril highlighted the number of blows that Ellen received, especially to the back of the head, and reported that the death was a clear homicide. The family was unhappy because despite having copies of all forensic documentation, they never had access to the police reports. They had requested them in court, but were never able to obtain them. After that, the family hired a private lawyer named Larry Krasner. After a few weeks working on the case, he managed to organize a meeting in May 2012 between the family, the police, and prosecutors' representatives, with the aim of reopening the investigation into the case. But unfortunately, their request was unsuccessful. What was agreed was simply the family's right to access the police reports they so desperately wanted. They had to file a public request for the release of these files and agree that on the day of access they could not make copies, take photos, nor make any notes. They could see what they could in the time determined by the police, and that was it. They accepted. However, the information they viewed did not change much, but it is not known whether they were given access to everything. Another expert who greatly helped the couple was Thomas Brennan, a retired police officer who pointed out that the absence of injuries or marks that could indicate that a victim tried to defend himself does not necessarily mean that they were not attacked. Tom opened up the possibility of a blitz attack, which is an attack that occurs so quickly, so suddenly, and by surprise, that the victim is unable to defend themselves. The former police officer also pointed out something very important. It had gone unnoticed that there was a small trail of blood on Ellen's face, which came out of her left nose and went towards her ear, horizontally. But given the way she was found, sitting, this trail it should have had a vertical path from top to bottom. In other words, at some point she was lying down and then her position altered. In 2015, this information about the blood on her face caught the attention of Guy Dandria, a private investigator with years of experience in the Philadelphia Homicide Prosecutor's Office. The investigator noticed a number of irregularities in the available reports, such as the lack of neuropathology opinion given by Dr. Lucy on Ellen's bone marrow. When the investigator requested this report from the police and the pathology office, they all said the report was missing or probably never existed. Tom, still following the process and now in contact with Guy, ended up discovering that the laboratory, even without having reports or after having lost them, still kept a piece of Ellen's spinal cord in the coroner's office. He contacted a trusted pathologist called Wayne Ross to examine it. The result showed that one of the blows had pierced the area, reaching the nerves and the brain, which would have caused great pain and even loss of consciousness. Regarding the question of the door lock, if this was a homicide, how would it be locked from the inside? Both investigator Guy and Tom easily found several videos online that showed how to lock this door from the outside, which would then imply the possibility that someone entered, committed the crime, and left. In October 2019, the family filed a civil lawsuit against the Philadelphia Medical Examiner and the pathologist who performed the first analysis. This process is still ongoing. In 2020, the current family lawyer Joseph Pedraza brought new information to the public, some of which had been archived for almost 10 years. An analysis of Ellen's computer found some searches such as quick suicide, painless suicide and suicide methods, but none of the search results included the cause of Ellen's death. He saw that in Sam's statements, some of which were only now accessible, he said that he had entered the apartment with the security guard Phil. He stated that he had accompanied him to the place and that together they broke down the door. But in Phil's statements, he said that he had barely gotten up from the table before Sam left the reception alone. This information from Phil was confirmed by security camera images. He also said that Sam was wearing boots that day and not sneakers. And remember, he had returned from the condominium's indoor gym. Another thing was that in Sam's phone records, there were two calls before the one he made to 911. One to his parents and one to his uncle, who is a lawyer. This reminds me a lot of the Isabella Nardoni case, which I already talked about here on the channel, when Alexandra and Anna Carolina called their parents before calling for help. Alexandra's father was also a lawyer. It's worth noting that two parts of Sam's call to 911 were a little strange. When he was told to perform the resuscitation procedure, he changed a little bit his mood, sounding like a smile at the end of the sentence.
I don't see her moving.
Okay, do you know how to do CPR?
I don't.
Okay, I can tell you what to do, okay, until they get there. I want you to keep her phone.
Oh, God.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, okay.
Are you willing to do CPR with me over the phone until they get there?
I have to, right?
Okay, so get her flat on her back, bare her chest, okay? You want to rip her shirt off.
And even when he realized that she had a knife in her chest, One of his explanations was that Ellen had fallen on her.
Her shirt won't come off. It's a zipper. Oh, my God. She stabbed herself.
Where?
She fell with a knife. Oh, no. Her knife's sticking out.
Her what?
There's a knife sticking out of her heart.
Oh, she stabbed herself?
I guess so. I don't know where she fell on it. I don't know.
Okay, well, don't touch it.
The question that many ask is, how did he not see that Ellen, sitting down, had a knife in her chest and only passed on this information when he was asked to help her? And last but not least, remember that I said that the apartment had already been cleared by the police when they claimed it was all a suicide. The next day, Sam's uncle and cousin also went to the apartment and took Ellen's personal laptop, work laptop, and phone, and kept them for a few days before handing them over to the police. But no action could be taken against Sam, because officially, it was suicide. Ellen's family never accused Sam, but when Sandra often said, "I know that my daughter's death was not suicide," a heavy atmosphere was left in the air. Contact with Sam was maintained for almost a year. After that, things between them cooled until they no longer talked to each other. Sam also never gave interviews about the case, never offering to help the family unravel the mysteries. He says that touching on this issue hurts him, makes him feel bad, and accepting that his fiancée's death was a suicide is the most pain he can bear. Sam is currently over 40 years old. He met another woman, got married, started a family, and has two children. The case of Ellen Greenberg's death for many is still a mystery. A petition was created to support the Greenbergs with the aim of changing Ellen's cause of death so that the investigations can be reopened. The link is in the description. The conduct of the investigation at the time was carried out in an extremely careless and dubious manner. Whether these errors were malicious or not, we may never know. All we know is that they may have greatly hindered the discovery of the truth behind Ellen Greenberg's death. But that has never discouraged Joshua and Sandra from continuing to fight for the truth. They are still searching for justice for their daughter.
Hey, você se interessa por crimes reais, serial killers, coisas macabras e tem um senso de humor um tanto quanto sórdido? Se sim, você não está sozinho.
Se você precisa de um lugar recheado de pessoas como você, venha conhecer o podcast Pátria Amada Criminal.
Todas as semanas tentamos entender o pior da humanidade.
Nesse processo a gente ri, chora, fica brava, fofoca, porque afinal de contas é assim que a gente fala quando está entre amigos.
Suas novas melhores amigas trevosas estão aqui no Pátria Amada Criminal.